Saturday View on Midlands 103. With thanks to Lumcleen Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. Lumcleanenergy.com. Have your say. Call 0818 300 103. Text or WhatsApp your Saturday View to 083 3010 103.
And a very good morning to you. Ronan Berry here. It's time for your Saturday View. Coming up between now and 11 o'clock, we're going to look at a wide range of things, including could Midlands towns go car free? And this, of course, is based on, so not just a plan, it's an actual solid proposal that from August this year, Dublin city centre will become car free. Now, it doesn't mean an out and out ban on cars. There are certain conditions and certain times cars will be allowed in. But it throws up a lot of questions. Is that something that we could do in our Midlands towns? And if we did, what benefits would it bring? Or could it be the final death knell for many small businesses around the country? Now, we know a lot of them have been struggling over the past couple of years as it is. So would a car-free town actually enhance their prospects, or would it actually just ultimately shut them all down? Will it create civic spaces that can be used for all sorts of events and fairs and markets? Will it bring a new social element to our towns? Because let's be honest, they're all based around roads and transport and getting cars in. And, you know, some people like to go shopping and park as close as possible to the door of the shop or the shopping centre. Others prefer to park somewhere on the outskirts of the town and walk in as well. So love to hear what your views on that. Is it something that could work? And could we maybe bring that in through consensus rather than it becoming a thing where actually this is now happening, react to it? So we'll have a bit of a discussion around that later on. I'll be joined by representatives from some of the Chambers of Commerce and also by a retailer who will give their penny's worth on that too. Look, we're also going to talk about breaking up. You know, I'm not trying to be negative ahead of Valentine's Day next week, but breaking up is hard to do, as the famous Neil Sedaka's song went. And so much so that in a recent survey in the UK of over, I think it was 2,000 participants, 35% of them admitted to holding on to items belonging to their former partner. Now, their list goes from everything from hoodies to photographs and everything in between. So a question I have for you there today is, have you held on to anything from a former partner? And if you want to text me in or WhatsApp me or even send me a voice note, 083 3010 103, or you'll get us here on the landline. Nelly is out there waiting for your calls to 0818 300 103. But drop us a text or a WhatsApp message and let us know what you kept, and maybe if you want, why you kept it. And it'd be really interesting to see. And we'll find out then, do those match the findings of that survey? But to look at that a little bit deeper, I'll be joined by a decluttering expert. And she's going to talk about why we hold on to things, why we keep so much stuff, you know, things like clothes. You know, do you ever go to your wardrobe and pull out, go looking for an item to wear, and you can't seem to find something that you really like or want, yet you have a wardrobe full of clothes? How can we go about actually decluttering our lifestyles and decluttering our houses too, and maybe getting rid of those items we've held on to for far too long? So I'd love to know what you've been holding on to. Mick has already been in touch as well, and he's pointed out that Jake Gyllenhaal used to go out with Taylor Swift, and he actually held on to her scarf after they broke up. And Mika said, check out the lyrics to All Too Well, her absolute masterpiece of a song where she makes reference to that. So there we go. So it happens even with the very famous people too. But I'm so say lots coming up here on Saturday View this morning. Looking forward to hearing what your thoughts are on all those things. And of course, one other thing that really caught my attention during the week, and I'm sure it did with you as well, it was that a survey showed that almost 25%, that's a quarter of six-year-olds, now own a smartphone. Now, my kids at home, the two boys, are older than that, and they were a bit shocked to hear that as well, because they, as you can probably guess, don't have smartphones. They were trying to list six-year-olds they know, and we're kind of saying, like, of those, potentially one of them has a smartphone. And the question I was asking there, and I asked Aidan Barrier earlier, that if you went back and could throw yourself back to when you were 6 years old, and if you could imagine having a smartphone. Now, this is in an era before TikTok, Instagram, anything like that, before even cat videos. What might you have been texting or sharing, or what sort of videos about what events, movies, songs, you know, stuff that was happening in your local area? What would you have been sharing with your friends and family, and why? If you had, you know, hypothetically a WhatsApp group back when you were 6 years old, what sort of rubbish might you have been posting in that group? Think back. So get your thinking caps on there this morning. 083 3010 103. Join that conversation. To begin this morning, though, I'm going to go back and refer to the subject of the hen harrier. Now, you've probably heard a lot about the hen harrier over the years. You probably wonder, well, what is it? Why do we keep talking about it? Well, it's a bird of prey. It's one of the few native birds of prey, and its numbers are in rapid decline. And the recent survey has highlighted this, and particularly highlighted Laois Offaly, and it puts down a number of reasons. It's saying that forestry being one reason, but also the rise of recreational activities. And if you recall, when the Slieve Bloom mountain bike trails were initially proposed and went for planning permission, planning was actually stalled by a number of years in order to ensure that the hen harrier's habitat was protected. So we're going to find a little bit now, very shortly, about the hen harrier, a fantastically beautiful bird. And in researching this piece, I was looking up a video there called Ireland's Sky Dancer. It's put up by Birdwatch Ireland. And it's a beautiful watch, and it kind of gives you a sense of why we should be looking to potentially conserve these fabulous birds. But also we have to take the look from community development, from business development, and you're creating enterprises. And if you, like me, have been on those mountain bike trails in the Slieve Blooms in particular, you probably know what a fantastic experience it is. So can we find balance? Can we have both working in symbiosis together? And if not, what are we going to do? But let's begin by finding out a little bit about the hen harrier themselves. I'm delighted to be joined now by Gordon Whiterley. He's from Birdwatch Westmead. Very good morning, Gordon. That's my fault. I have to slide that down there. Very good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Ron.
Gordon, just give us a little overview of the hen harrier, known as Ireland's Sky Dancer, and I suppose why it's so important that people like Birdwatch and various groups feel that we have to protect this at all costs.
Thanks for having me on. I'd just like to say, I'm not coming from a scientific background. I'm just a normal member of the public, but I'm a member of Birdwatch Westmead. And I've just had a great love of bird watching and nature all my life. So I'm not speaking for Birdwatch Ireland, but I am a member. And I'd ask a load of people out there listening to possibly join Birdwatch Ireland, because every penny we get through donations and contributions is really appreciated. And it helps to conserve our nature and birds all around us. But the hen harrier specifically is one of those sort of iconic Irish birds. Kind of when you see it, you'll always remember it. And I suppose I'm going back maybe when I was 13, 14 years old or something like that, out in Cape Clear in West Cork. And I used to see them quite regularly there on passage in October. And they're just a beautiful bird. The male is completely different to the female. The male is kind of grey-blue in colour with black wingtips and a beautiful face and a white rump. And the female is beautifully brown, rufous brown and mottled. And it looks completely different. But they have a beautiful way, sort of slim, elegant sort of raptors. And they have a sort of a tern-like quality to their flight. And they move gracefully over the bogs, searching for prey. And they're just kind of an iconic Irish bird. And it'd be a shame if we were going to have to lose another species, because that seems to be the way it's going at present, you know?
Yeah. How close do you think, you know, and the basic estimate are we to that bird being extinct?
Well, I'm just listening to the surveys that the experts are doing, people that are working with Birdwatch Ireland and other governmental agencies as well, is that we're down to possibly, I think the latest survey said something between, I'm just going to look at my figures here, it's very hard to get an absolute definitive on it, but it's somewhere between 110 and 150 pairs left in the country. So, you know, at very best, you're talking 300 birds.
I think the survey is suggesting that it's almost a 60% decrease since the first survey done in 1998 to 2000 as well. So there's definitely a significant decline there. The survey is also highlighting kind of areas or issues that are potentially driving this, one being forestry, the other being the rise of recreational activity. From your perspective, where do you sit on that? Like, is forestry still the biggest thing, or are we just, you know, with the expansion of farming as well, is it kind of our own activities that are ultimately causing this and removing its habitat?
Well, just from the layman's perspective, I think it's just a combination of factors. It's sort of degradation of habitat, really, I suppose, is the key. And it's kind of obvious because we can all look around and see what's going on. You know, it's sort of, you know, we've been sort of in this sort of 60, 70 years, everybody's been talking about progress, productivity of farmers. We've got to get every yield out of every square inch of land. And now all of a sudden there's sort of maybe we got it wrong sort of vibe going on. So it's like, yes, it's just degradation of habitat, really. And I can't really, you know, point out any particular one area, but there's a number of factors. For example, let's say too much forestry. I mean, what hen harriers like is they like open sort of uplands, like mountainous areas, like Slieve Blooms or like the Knockmeel Down Mountains, stuff like that. But if you put in a load of sort of forestry on the sort of the bottom part of these mountains, that then kind of rules out that possibility of them hunting in that area. So it kind of reduces their area. And then if you put in other factors, farmers that were told to, dry up their land and make it, viable. And then you're taking away that areas for them as well. Where their prey exists, because their prey doesn't exist in ryegrass. You know, these beautiful 40-acre fields of ryegrass that we were told that was the way forward, and everybody removed all their ditches and farmland and all that kind of stuff. Now it's like, well, there's no prey in that, for hen harriers or any other species. That is like dead ground for them. So they're kind of being reduced into a very small area of the lowland wetlands where they forage for prey in the winter. And then in the uplands, which is their breeding grounds, if we keep planting more forests in these areas, then that's those areas kind of gone as well. So we have to be very careful and plan it properly, the way forward to save this beautiful bird.
And last month, actually, Minister for Nature, Heritage and Electoral Reform Malcolm Noonan has launched a public consultation, the draft Hen Harrier Threat Response Plan. So again, it shows that at government level, there is awareness that something has to happen quickly. But I'm going to just bring somebody else into this conversation now as well. Jonathan O'Mara is the owner of Mid-Ireland Adventure, based around Kinnity in County Offaly. And Jonathan's also going to be an independent candidate in the upcoming local elections. Very good morning, Jonathan. Are you there with me, Jonathan? Actually, Jonathan appears to have just dropped off the line there. We'll go back to Gordon for a second as well. Nelly, we'll try and get Jonathan back on the phones there too. It's interesting to get the perspective from somebody who's run for election, but also in business there and looks at these mountain bike trails, indeed would have been probably very much behind and pro getting the trails in the first place as well. Across Westmead, Gordon, is there any, there's a lot of development there too around greenways. Is there much habitat that actually supports the hen harrier, or can people begin to look at areas and say we could create an area of conservation for the hen harrier and breed its prey and create a place where these birds could again live and thrive?
Well, yeah, there's always a possibility of kind of rowing back, but some places that we have, it's kind of almost, it's sort of we're in an emergency response at the moment, so let's try and maintain what we have. So Westmead probably doesn't have that many hen harriers, but Offaly does, and Leash. Basically the main breeding ground in the Midlands for the hen harrier would be the Slieve Bloom Mountains, which kind of borders Leash and Offaly. And then they go up there sort of in March and they stay there till September, and that's where they breed the males and the females, and hopefully they're successful, in that open moorland and they have the prey there. In the winters, they move from there because it's quite hard to live in that sort of landscape in the winter. And they move down into the lowlands. And they have a very successful area around Loch Boura, which has been brilliantly managed by Bord na Mona. And it just shows what can be done when everybody starts thinking properly about what's been happening to our environment. So Loch Boura, if you went down to Loch Boura in October any year and you sat for an hour and looked out on that beautiful kind of vast expanse of Loch Boura, you will spot, possibly two or three hen harriers sort of hawking over the bogs there and searching for prey. And it really is a beautiful sight. So they're very close to Slieve Blooms. They're there for the summer and then they're in Loch Boura for the winter. It's working very well. We've got to preserve, all that. To keep them in this area. I'll see the odd hen harrier in Westmead, but there's probably no perfect habitat for Westmead. I don't know for certain. There could be areas that I don't know, but I think the great place really is Slieve Blooms and In the Midlands, and in their wintering grounds would be Loughborough and that area, you know.
Do we know if there's any other factors that could contribute to a decline, like, say, even change in environmental conditions? You know, we know kind of global warming is a thing. We're seeing, you know, drastic changes in weather. Like, can that have an impact on a bird's habitat and indeed its likelihood to survive?
Well, it, whatever has an impact on it, on its what it preys on is so. Good health, because the prey is there. So, you know, sometimes people say that, you know, oh, what the heck, we're going to lose hen harrier and just in one species, you know, it's not the end of the world. But actually, what you don't see then is all the other species that you lose as well. Because if you lose the hen harrier, it's a sign that we're losing other stuff, other little smaller species that you can't see in the bogs. You know, the rodents and the amphibians and all that sort of stuff and the insects. So it's an indicator of the health of the overall landscape.
Absolutely. So the decline of one species, you say, could actually ultimately be the symbol of, you know, a huger decline in terms of the whole ecosystem as well.
It indicates that, yeah, you're losing another area. And, you know, it's kind of, when do we shout stop, you know? Like in my lifetime, we've lost the corn bunting from, you know, that used to breed in Ireland in quite a lot of areas. Now it's a small little brown bird and it didn't get much press because it's not showy and interesting and beautiful. The hen harrier is. So if we're still struggling to save the one of the most beautiful showy birds, then, you know, the corn bunting didn't have a hope. And we lost that back in the, you know, I think the last time it bred was in the mid-90s and it just went away without a whisper.
I think that's an interesting point as well. If it's a more of a showy species, it's probably easier to get people behind it, and hopefully we'll make
exactly.
a change. I'm going to bring Jonathan O'Mara into the conversation.
Sure.
Jonathan, I think you're online too with me now. Good morning.
Good morning, Ronan, and good morning to your listeners.
Apologies there, Jonathan. I think the line just dropped off earlier, but I suppose you're coming to the point of view, you know, you're running as a local for the local election as an independent candidate too, but you're a person whose business interests involve, you know, a lot around the sleeve blooms as well. Take us back, your own awareness of the hen harrier, did you always know about it, or was it something that really came to light when the planning application for the sleeve bloom mountain bike trails was stalled back in 2017, 2018?
Yeah, well, look, like Gordon, your previous speaker there, I'm a nature lover too. And, you know, obviously, you know, we've heard of the hen harrier. It did come into, I suppose, a lot of people know about it since the application for the sleeve bloom mountain bike trails went in probably around 10 years ago now. But it is worrying that the survey is worrying. You know, like, I live in Banagher, and like Gordon, like we had the corn crake in Banagher for years on the Callows, and it's gone now. So the last thing anyone wants to see is the hen harrier leaving the sleeve blooms. But, you know, the survey is a national survey, and there's many contributing factors. I think it would be wrong to single out outdoor recreation as one of those factors that has an impact. I suppose if you look at the sleeve blooms, Ronan, it's the largest state-owned nature reserve in Ireland. There's, I think, 2,300 hectares in the sleeve blooms. Part of that is managed by the National Parks and Wildlife, and the other part then will be managed by Quilcha, who they'll be in charge of the commercial harvest of the trees for the state. The mountain bike trails probably take up a small portion of the mountain in the sleeve blooms. So I suppose when the application went in then for plan permission to the two local authorities, would have been Leash Offaly, local county councils, the planning conditions would have been very strict for that. You know, there would have been ecological reports and environmental impact statements. And as you mentioned in the outset there was a delay because the original proposed plans for the trails was rejected because there was an issue with the hen harrier and its habitat.
And are you aware when the final trails were designed and constructed, did they actually, were they sympathetic to the hen harrier? Were they changed to an area where maybe it's not living and breeding, or maybe, I suppose, trying to avoid that impact that you might have on the animals and species it preys on? Do you know if that was, how that was factored into the design? And were people like yourselves consulted on that?
That was one of the biggest factors. Yeah, absolutely, Ron. And that was one of the biggest factors because of the hen harrier habitat, you know, and there was very strict guidelines there, so they had to go back to the drawing board and look at different routes, because of the original route was going through the hen harrier habitat. So yeah, that's. But I mean, look, there's lots of different contributing factors. I think, you know, one thing that wasn't mentioned there is was the biodiversity in the mountain, and you know, the pesticides that might be used by the state agencies. You know, I said acid having an impact too, in relation to the decline of the harrier.
Yeah, there's multiple contributing factors as well, and I suppose the one with recreation and leisure jumps out there, and particularly when there's been so much work done over the past number of years. I suppose from a business perspective, is it bringing tourists? Is it bringing people onto the mountains into Laois Offaly? Is it doing what it was expected to do? And is there more coming?
So it's still in its infancy. It's, you know, I do believe that it is going to be a huge attraction for the Midlands, Roland, but a lot of work still has to be done, you know, with relation to the infrastructure around that. You know, we're in the Ireland Hidden Heartland brand now, and, you know, they're coming in behind it. But it's still in its infancy. There's lots of people coming to the Slieve Glooms on their own bikes to experience the mountain bike trails. As a business, yes, like we're still quite enough, but we're hoping that it will pick up.
And is it something that you could add to your business, maybe to bring people on trips in the hope of spotting the hen harrier doing its famous sky dance?
Well, because the trails, you know, were designed in a way, like, I haven't seen any of the hen harriers out on the trails. I've seen some buzzards, all right, and some red squirrels and grey squirrels and lots of deer out there, but the hen harrier can be elusive.
Well, there's a plan. Maybe we'll get our boots on some. Then you can bring me. We'll try and find that hen harrier and capture it on video and start to show people what it's worth and why it's worth protecting. But Jonathan, thanks so much for that this morning. I'll let you back to work there. Jonathan O'Mara, of course, the owner of Mid Ireland Adventure, and he's also an independent candidate for the upcoming local elections. And thanks also there to Gordon Whiterley from Birdwatch Westmead. So keep your texts coming in there too, like the hen harrier. If you watch the videos, you'll be convinced it is worth keeping as well. And it's good to know that developments are trying to keep that in focus as they're developing and as they're planning in these. And hopefully it can turn around and halt the decline. We have huge parts of Offaly and Laois that are now being handed over and, you know, gone as natural areas of conservation. Hopefully all that can help. And let's try and get momentum behind that and avoid that species going. Because as Gordon says, it's if you lose one, there's a knock-on effect. It's possibly the sign that other species have first declined, that it put another species under threat, and then it's what happens afterwards can have an absolute detrimental effect on our whole ecosystem. I asked you earlier to text me in with stuff that you'd kept belonged to former partners, and I have a text here from Sylvia in Pulla. She says, "Morning, Ronan. The one thing I kept when my partner left was his money. He had too much of it. So, well, hats off to you. Well done there, Sylvia." Keep those texts coming in. Let me know if you have kept and hoarded any items belonging to a former partner, because after a break, we're going to find out how you can go about decluttering all those spaces you have at home.
Saturday View on Midlands 183, with thanks to Lumclun Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. LumclunEnergy.com.
One thing that seems to be particularly hard for about 35% of people is actually giving back all these items and stuff belong to your former partner. Now, this is a result of a survey from the UK earlier in the week, and it talks about all the things that people regularly keep from an ex-partner. Things like photographs, cards like birthday cards, Christmas cards they've written you, love letters, jewellery, books, ticket stubs, you know, those reminders of all the places that you might have gone. So again, maybe that's a good reminder, maybe it's a negative one. T-shirts, mugs, paintings, and even hoodies. So I've put a call out there to listeners and said, if there's any items that you've kept belong to a former partner, text me in and let me know. As Mick says, Jake Gyllenhaal famously kept his scarf belong to Taylor Swift, so much so that she actually wrote it and included it in one of her songs as well. So thanks for that, Mick. And Sylvia, of course, mentioned how she kept money belong to her former partner. But I suppose this whole thing of keeping stuff belong to other people, it raises that question in the first place, why do we keep stuff like that? And if we just go back and think of our own lives, think of your desk in work, think of your house at home, have you got a constant urge or desire to have more storage? Do you need more space to store more stuff? And the question I'd have is, houses are definitely getting bigger. The size of houses people are now building are way larger than ever before. Does that in turn mean more storage, therefore more stuff? And are we just swimming sometimes in a sea of stuff, random stuff? Because if you've ever moved house, you'll know exactly that when you take out all the stuff you want, there's always loads of stuff left. And there's kind of no place for it. There's no kind of categories. There's no designation. It's just stuff. And you know what to do with it. Or if you go to your wardrobe in the morning, or you're going to an event or a wedding, and you've got to pick out something to wear, and you can't find something that you really like, yet you're looking into a wardrobe full of clothes. What's happening there? Why do we keep so much stuff? And is there anything that we can do about it? Well, who better to ask than a professional organiser, Terry O'Callaghan? You'll find out more about Terry on decluttered.com. And Terry joins me now. Very good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Ronan. Good morning to your listeners. Thank you for having me on your show this
Not
morning.
Really interested in this now. Your tagline says, you. Motivating and inspiring others so they can truly see the power of decluttering and organising. And yes, you can do this. Tell us about your service and exactly what you do for customers.
So, as you pointed out, Ronan, I'm a professional organiser. I help people to declutter, let go of items, organise what we're going to keep, and live a simpler, more clutter-free life, a healthier, happier life, Ronan. And as you pointed out, we are, our homes are getting bigger, our desk of work, we have items everywhere on it. How many of those items do we actually need? So when I first have a chat with somebody, I say, okay, you know, tell me what you have and tell me what you're using. You pointed out the wardrobe, Ronan. That's actually, you know, one that I see all the time, to be honest. I say to people, okay, you have this large walk-in wardrobe. A lot of previous generations didn't have those. And the more space we have, the more we fill. So people say to me, Terry, I have this wardrobe. I look at the stuff every morning. It's full, but I have nothing to wear. Absolutely nothing to wear. The problem is people are looking at this wardrobe first thing in the morning, Ronan, and their brain is totally overwhelmed right from the word go. 7 o'clock in the morning, people are already, you know, facing that challenge. And this is even before someone has started their actual day. And they don't know what to wear. They just don't know what to wear. So I say to them, okay, you know, what do you actually need? And I say, how long have you had these items? And some people have items sitting in the wardrobe since they moved into a house. That could be 10, 15, 20 years. And I ask them, I say, okay, why are you keeping those items? Oh, well, you know, this is, you know, something I hear a lot of, Ronan. I bought them, you know, when I was 25, 30, and I can't let go of them. They remind me of happier times when I was working at X or I was in a certain place in my life, and I want to keep it because, you know, it makes me happy having it there. I feel safe. You know, some of the items are sentimental. So I say, okay, you know, but what do you actually, how much of the stuff are you actually using? How much of the stuff are you actually wearing? And Ronan, you'd be surprised. People might be wearing one. So if I looked at five items, from those five items, people might be wearing one of them. So I get to work, you know, very quickly. I kind of diagnose, you know, what we need to start doing. And we get working and we start moving stuff. And we start organizing what's left. And I say to somebody, okay, these items can live on in another life. Just because they're sitting here collecting dust, you're not using them, they can actually live on somewhere else. You know, we think about sustainability as well. You know, I heard about your previous speaker, Ronan, and I was listening, you know, to the end of that. And, you know, there's a lot of things we're doing these days that have a huge environmental impact. And the more items that are being produced, the more greenhouse gases. And so we just need to kind of get back, I think, a little bit to, you know, to basics. Think of, you know, sustainability and decluttering and letting go and moving things on as well is all about, you know, having a more sustainable, healthier life.
So is it largely so then about kind of taking kind of almost like a very logical approach to begin with, going, right, you have a suit, so you have a three-piece suit hanging in a press.
Yeah.
You're hanging on to it in case you need it as a backup, but actually it's now a different style. You know, it's a wider leg trouser. So even if you put it on now, you're probably not going to wear it because it's slightly out of style. Can you look at things very practically like that? Look at you're keeping clothes that you had when you were a different body shape 20 years ago, and get rid of some of that stuff and then focus on the emotional piece. Because if 35% of people are admitting to keeping items from a previous relationship, including clothing, there has to be a massive emotional connection there. And what is it maybe that drives our emotional connection with stuff? I know you've mentioned the reminders of other times, but there must be some really deep down stuff as well that's causing us to just not get rid of things.
Yeah. I suppose when we look back to happier times, so, you know, for example, you know, when we have items that we wore maybe 20 years ago, when we felt happy. We were in a place where we were very happy. We might have been in a previous relationship. We were with somebody that, you know, meant a lot to us. We loved them dearly. And we did a lot of things together. And we might have worn those particular clothes. And every time we look at those clothes, it reminds us of those times. We have happy memories. You know, we look back and say, oh my goodness, I wore that when I first went to Australia. And we were so happy. And it's almost, you know, just reminiscence of a previous life that you had, and it's making you feel safe. And it's actually, the memories are actually making you happy thinking about it. But you have to look now and say, okay, I have my memories and I'm not going to lose my memories, but I need to let go of those items. I can't be keeping these items forever. Yes, you know, I'm looking back to the happier times. I have those memories. And, you know, there was a lot of happy times in that part of my life, in that relationship. And there's nostalgia, there's sentiment, you know, there's safety, there's positive feelings from that time in our lives, Ronan. But it's actually keeping us stuck because we're actually living in the past, basically. And I don't say that people get rid of all your memories. You keep your memories because, you know, we all have memories. We all have a past. You know, the one thing we all have a past, we have a present, and we have a future. And at this point in time, you have your memories from the past. And you live, you know, in the present, and you think about what you're going to be doing in the future. But I speak to a lot of people, Roman. I see it so many times when I'm having chats with people about decluttering and organizing and letting go and just moving on. And for some people, it's very easy. I say, Terry, I want the stuff gone. I'm moving on out of my life, and I want a lovely, clutter-free life and a clutter-free space. Whereas other people are more hesitant.
I think that's an important one, because is that a factor? Yeah. How quickly, if you've decided something needs to go, does it need to go there and then? Because I'm sure loads of listeners have probably got bags in their cars destined for the charity shop, sitting in the boot for 2 months. And sometimes then if you've kids that rediscover something and it comes back into the house, how quickly do we need to get it out when we decide we don't need it?
We get it out as quickly as possible. I say to people that day, and if they're not able to do it, I mean, I do move things on for people as well, and I say to people, it's not till it's physically out of sight is it actually gone. Because I actually worked with a lady a few months ago, and we actually had a lot of stuff packed up, and you know, we had it ready to go, and she said, actually, Terry, can I just go through that bag? There's a few things in there I'd really like to see. And we'd already gone through the reasons of, you know, moving stuff on. And in those situations, Ron, and I say, okay, look, hold on to those couple of items for now, because for some people, some items are very difficult to let go, particularly the kind of the sentimental items. But for other people, you know, they're happy to let them go. But the sooner they're gone, Ron, and once you make that decision, and if, you know, if someone doesn't have a car, if they're not able to get to a, you know, a charity shop, if they're not able to get the items moving on, I say to them, okay, I will take the stuff when we're finished our session, and you name a charity that you would like those items to go to, or what you'd like to do with them, and I get those items moving on.
And get them moving and get them out.
You know yourself, absolutely, out of sight, out of mind, completely.
Absolutely, and I think actually if you do that, you actually realise you actually don't actually value them as much as you once did at all. They just need to get them out. But interestingly, I think 55% of people in that survey said that they've held on to items for over 20 years. So we definitely have a tendency to hoard and hold on to things too long. But Terry, hopefully you've given people a couple of tips there. The website again, if people want, declutteredbyterry.com is the website. If you need to start your decluttering journey, or if you have stuff held over from a former partner, maybe time is coming to get rid of it. But for now, Terry, thank you so much for that this morning.
You're very welcome, Ronan. And again, just to say, I do say to everybody, you can do it. When the time is right, you can do it. And people sometimes just need to just think about it. And once they make that decision, oh my goodness, we can actually do a lot more than we actually realise, Ronan, when it comes to it. And it's amazing. People never regret letting that stuff go in the end. I see that with people. Once they've reclaimed their space and the items are gone, they're in a totally different space, and more importantly, headspace, Ronan.
Absolutely. Well, there's a task for people to do. Get started this afternoon after the show and get into it and get started. As Terry says, yes, you can. Thanks so much, Terry, there. Declutteredbyterry.com is that website. Now, time for a quick break. After that, will we ever see car-free towns in the Midlands? Let's get some perspectives on that from a few different people. Talk to you in just a couple of moments.
Saturday View on Midlands 183 with thanks to Lumclean Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. Lumcleanenergy.com.
A quick reminder, the Midlands 103 2024 Green Home and Energy Show taking place in the Tullamore Court Hotel this Sunday the 18th, or on Sunday the 18th of February. It'll showcase a stunning new iV5 from Colm Quinn BMW and many other electric cars too. There'll also be a chance to win a €500 voucher off your new kitchen, win hotel stays, feather cushions, even free flooring, loads of stuff, and even a pallet of prizes from Arigna Fuels. But that whole thing around cars is quite interesting, because this week it was announced that from August this year, Dublin City Centre is effectively going to become car-free. They're really trying to remove the use of private vehicles in the city centre. Now, this seems to apply to all cars. So even if they're electric or hybrid, it seems to be just an out and out. People are calling it a ban. Different groups are calling to say, look, more consultation is needed to give details around deliveries, you know, access for people with disabilities, all the usual stuff as well. But is that something that could actually feature in towns around the Midlands? I'm going to go to Mullingar first. I'm glad to be joined by John Gagan. And John is the Investment and Development Spokesperson at Mullingar Chamber. Very good morning, John.
Good morning, Ronan, and your listeners.
John, could we see Mullingar car-free in the next year or two?
I don't think we will in that short a period of time, but I do think that there will be public consultation about this to see is it possible to decarbonise and reduce traffic in the town centre. And it seems to be a European policy going back a number of years where they've tried to slow down traffic to go into town centres and reduce the volume of traffic in town centres. And the long-term goal here is to eradicate town centres of car traffic, which is not really practical in the way Mullingar operates and a lot of towns operate. But we're going to have to be very creative around how we deal with this issue.
I think in Paris, actually, on Sunday, tomorrow, they're due to vote on whether they're going to make triple the charging cost for people with SUVs. So the SUVs are coming into sharp focus now as well. Our towns are built around the roads, so we have to almost reverse engineer things now as well. So do you think that that's where it used to come in terms of like local policy and design?
If you look at Mullingar as an example, I mean, we have a very good link road around the town. So you can actually get around the edge of the town fairly efficiently, and you can get around the edge of the town centre relatively efficiently. But it's a massive transition to go from being able to drive up and down the main street to not being able to drive up and down the main street. And the most affected people from this, I think, would be retailers. And I think the council and the authorities need to be extremely cognizant of retailers, because it's one of the most challenging business spaces in the economy. And if we completely eradicate traffic in a town centre, it may lead to a loss of footfall in town centres.
Let's put that to a retailer as well. Anthony Kearns is the owner of Guy Clothing and Co. in Tullamore. Anthony, would you agree with John that this could be another blow towards retail if we were to go car-free in town centres?
Good morning, Ronan, and everyone listening. I agree with John in terms of the death nail of the town centre, and I disagree that it's something we have to look at in the short to medium term. If you look at two examples at the moment where it's happened or happening in the Midlands, and talk to retailers or managers of shopping centres which have car parking, but the knock-on effect of allowing not easy access. Portlaoise Main Street and Portlaoise Traders Association will tell you this. The town, the main street in Portlaoise is dead and gone. It doesn't exist anymore as a retail area because of what they did over the last 10 or 15 years. I currently have a unit in Athlone, Church Street and Sean Costa Street. There was a meme up a few weeks ago. Athlone Town Traders had it up. You have to take it in the latest in, because obviously if someone lost a loved one recently, it might be taken in a different vein, but it was a headstone. And it was the death of Church Street at Athlone. And basically, it was just saying that Church Street and Sean Costa Street and Athlone has been destroyed. So you cannot now go through from Dunn Stores on Sean Costa Street down to the Shannon on Church Street. That is now being pedestrianised, in not in all parts, but a certain part of it. But since September of last year, it's blocked off completely for cars and traffic. And the footpath is about 3 foot wide at the moment. Now, it will be pedestrianised and reopened whenever it's finished. But if you go from Dunn Stores to the Corner House Bistro, which was a fantastic business in Athlone, there's only 6 premises left now since last September. Now, some were empty before that, but 5 or 6, like a pharmacy is closing next week on that street, like pharmacies people need. So there's 2 elements. One is it doesn't work, it won't work, and it can't work because people need, we're not a European city with the climates that these countries have. And 2, you think of a 60, 70-year-old person who wants to get to a chemist, they can't be relying on car park 2 miles away. And the other big thing, particularly in relation to Dublin, Ronan, we don't have, like, Eamon Ryan is delusional, and I don't think anyone can disagree with me on that, right, in a lot of his merits. He wants us to carpool from the country into town to work and to carpool to school, all nonsensical reasons. But if you think of Dublin City Centre, we can't get a train or a Lewis or a Dart or whatever from Dublin's airport in 2024 into Dublin City Centre. Yeah. I spoke about it on Will's show last week, something came up about a green policy, and I said, like, I'm in Dublin at the moment buying for autumn, for Christmas 2024. I have to drive to Dublin because I can't get off at Houston Station and get a Lewis to any of the areas I want to go. And it would be a lot more
difficult
for me.
And I say loads of people as well are bringing, you know, family members even up for appointments. If you have to go to somewhere the like, hospital, say, Sandyford, like, if it's almost a day trip if you go on public transport, where you can do it in sort of a 3-hour turnaround in a car, and that's a challenge.
100%.
Do you think with our town centres, though,
before the horse again?
Yeah, but do our councils need to take a big move here, create out of town car parks, and just have buses just float in the town, passing your shop every 15 minutes, every 10 minutes, just that people can hop on?
That is the only way it could conceivably work, but it's not every hour, every 2 hours. It has to be every 50 minutes, hop on, hop off, both affordable and sustainable, both for the economy, for the climate, and for the person using it, where they, like, it's wheelchair accessible, there's somebody there to help an older person on, it's kid friendly with buggy, like, there's a whole, like, it just can't happen overnight. There's a whole mirage of things that has to fall into place.
It's going to take money as well. John, I'll bring you back in there for a second. Could that work for Mullingar?
It could be, just going back to that loan. I mean, I'm extremely familiar with that loan, and it's a town with enormous challenges in terms of its layout, because the river splits in two and you have all these old streets. I campaigned last year to try and get, as Meath County Council, to buy the car park that's for sale above beside St Mary's Church, and it was completely shot down by them. I mean, there's a building that cost 10 million euros to build, and they can buy it for 800 grand and they won't entertain it. And I think that'll, if they did do that and offered free parking there, it would add huge life to the middle of that lone town and allow those people you're talking about there, Alan, to get in and out of town.
Absolutely,
you know, with stress.
There is potential. John and Anthony, thank you so much for that. I think it's a debate that will follow up in time, but we'll be careful. John Gaig and Anthony Kern is there. Thanks for that. That's it from me today. Lorraine is here next from 11. Talk to you soon.
Innovation powering progress. LumclunEnergy.com. Bedlands 103.